Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Hey, RotoViz Radio listener, this is Curtis Patrick from the Dynasty Command Center podcast, and I've got a special deal for you today. Go to rotoviz.com, click the subscribe button, put the 12-month subscription in your cart, and use promo code RVRadio2021. That's RVRadio2021, and you're going to save 10%. Taking advantage of this deal, getting your hands on what's included in the package is the best way to enhance your performance this year. So go to rotoviz.com and subscribe now.
And welcome to another edition of Dynasty Recast on RotoViz Radio, brought to our friends over at Blue Wire on the RotoViz Radio Network. July is in the books. We are into August on the Dynasty Tradecast. We're going to start talking about some win now type stuff, but also still keeping your Dynasty stuff in tune. And that's what we're here to do with myself, Nathan Powell, and my lovely, amazing American co-host, Dan Zanio.
As if my nationalities have changed at any point. The only person with any changes is you recording in a hotel at the moment, which internet seems good enough.
I don't know. We're breaking up a little bit, so we'll see how we make it through this one. But this will be the last one, and there will be some, you know, announcements made on the Twitterverse and the Instagramverse in the coming days. But hotel for now. And so let's get into the show. We're going to talk about some news and notes and some, you know, interesting, you know, topics that might be coming up in your leagues, and then some rookies path to production, basically talking about specific rookies and how they're going to produce at the expected amount of production or even exceed that production for maybe some players that have some higher expectations. So start us off. The big news of the week is one Carson Wentz with a foot injury that has been bothering him since high school. If you've ever said the sentence, Carson Wentz is playing like he's got a broken foot out there, well, it's because he has. And I guess he's decided to finally, and the Colts have decided to finally fix that up. So I guess the Eagles are even more incompetent than once first believed. But Quentin Nelson also has the same injury. He is also out for that similar 7 to 12 weeks. So let's start off with Carson Wentz here. He's the main discussion point. This is bad news for Carson Wentz. This was supposed to be his opportunity to redeem himself, his opportunity to rebound, his opportunity to produce in an offense with Jonathan Taylor and Michael Pittman and T.Y. Hilton. And now that opportunity is not going to happen until at least midseason.
Yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate. I thought this was going to be the opportunity for him to kind of prove everybody wrong. And all this really does is reiterate the fact that he can't stay healthy. And even if he could, is he really going to be, you know, a difference maker or an above average starter? I don't think that was ever going to happen. But if it were to happen, it was going to be an Indy with that offensive line, even though the weapons are mediocre at best. I mean, everything was kind of what he needed to succeed, and getting a nice offensive line, even though he had a halfway decent one in Philadelphia. This is, yeah, if I wasn't all the way out before, which I'm pretty sure I was, I most definitely am now. He's just a walking injury. Or a limping injury, I suppose, at this point with a foot injury.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't necessarily been all in on Wentz. I don't have any on my teams. I've dabbled a couple times, traded him back and forth a few times. But I did have some hope. I did think that his ceiling in 2021 was fairly high in that, with a Frank Reich Indianapolis Colts offense. And I guess you could still say, like, there's opportunity to rebound the second half of the season if he comes back, you know, week 9, 10, 11, that range. But at the end of the day, you know, the Colts are not going to get back what they were expecting when they traded essentially a third and a first or a third and a second for Carson Wentz. And so it's a bit frustrating for Carson Wentz managers. I think that at this stage, I'm not going out and, like, it's weird, because I think that he might end up being undervalued over the next couple months, but that doesn't mean I'm going to go start sending offers. I acknowledge the opportunity to rebound in value, but I think there's enough risk there where I'm just like, yeah, I'll let someone else, fight that battle.
Yeah, the floor is about as low as it gets for an NFL starting quarterback.
And it got lower because of this injury.
Right. And honestly, you kind of alluded to the Eagles earlier on being a little bit at fault for even, you know, going out and getting Wentz. But this is on Carson almost entirely. He's had this injury since high school. He could have fixed it in high school. He could have fixed it in college. He could have fixed it anytime in his first however many seasons he's been in now. Think about another. I mean, he could have double dipped. He went all of his time he's missed in the NFL. He very easily could have gotten this fixed during that stretch, because it's
lingering. He could have been recovering from a toe injury and the torn ACL.
I mean, he could have fixed everything all at once. And honestly, I don't feel like it's going to work out for him in the NFL. It just feels like bad decision after bad decision. The one good decision he made was, well, it probably wasn't even his decision, was getting himself to Indy. That's been the only positive in the last 5 years for Carson Wentz. Everything else has been pretty negative aside from his one season where he looked like he might be an average NFL quarterback. But I'm done at this point. If you can get out for a first plus, absolutely fantastic. I would doubt you're getting that at this point. I'd probably just be targeting like a mid-tier positional player, looking in your anywhere from like a Deebo Samuel to even like a Michael Gallup plus in that kind of deal. I doubt you're getting any quarterback that's worth having in exchange for Wentz. And the only way Nathan and I, you know, pretty much build the same way, but the only way I like to transition off of a quarterback that is only going to be losing value until he's back is by going younger at wide receiver. So my move here would be to get draft picks or to get younger at wide receiver and keep the upside. I don't think he's ever going to exceed low end QB2 production.
Now, with both the Wentz injury and the Quentin Nelson injury, probably the most affected party from a fantasy perspective is one Jonathan Taylor. Jonathan Taylor had a huge rookie season, 77.9 rushing yards per game, 0.8 rushing touchdowns per game, 16.9 PPR points per game. And his 2020 matches, as far as the range of outcomes back via RotoViz, make sure you get your promo code 2021 RB Radio. Matches are Eddie Lacy, Leonard Fournette, Todd Gurley, Marshawn Lynch. So definitely some promising, outlook on Jonathan Taylor. But is there a promising outlook on the Indianapolis Colts in 2021? They have come out and said that Jacob Eason is their guy, that they're not shopping the quarterback market. They're not looking at Nick Foles. They're not looking at Tyrod Taylor or, you know, whatever veteran quarterback might be on the market. They're not looking at him. They're looking at Jacob Eason to fill that role for however long Wentz is out. Honestly, from a like team building perspective, I do think that's the right move, because if Eason is bad, they're going to go 1-7, and then they're going to be well on their way to a top pick and be able to, you know, get an actual quarterback of the future. And if Eason's good, which is not necessarily likely, if Eason is good, then they have a quarterback of the future. So, you know, it's worth giving this sort of a tryout for Jacob Eason.
Yeah, honestly, going back, it was the original mistake was just getting Carson Wentz. They should have went and got Gardner Minshew or, you know, somebody more in that tier. I understand that the price is probably different, but it's a weird spot. If I have Jacob Eason, I'm selling him before he plays a game because he's not good and he won't be good, especially without Quentin Nelson there. Limited assets for them to be throwing to. I think it's a big knock for Jonathan Taylor not having a starting quarterback or Quentin Nelson. The line's still pretty good outside of that, but I mean, he's the leader of that offense in its entirety, and there really isn't an alpha wide receiver. You know, Michael Pittman showed some signs of some things. T.Y. Hilton's kind of on the last leg of his career. And outside of that, you know, maybe like a Nyheim Hines. We expect Marlon Mack back this year, but, you know, obviously that offense should run through Jonathan Taylor. I just think when defenses only have one thing to focus on, it's going to be stopping Jonathan Taylor, and it'll be a lot easier to do when there's no threat of a passing game.
And there was some of this before the Mack injury last year, but Marlon Mack is getting RB1 snaps in practice. So that is still something to be a bit of a nuisance for Jonathan Taylor. But overall, whether it's the discount for Mack, the discount in regards to Taylor, whether it's you're discounting it because there's Marlon Mack, you're discounting because of the Wentz injury, you're discounting because of Quentin Nelson, I'm all about getting high-level players in Dynasty at any sort of discount. And everyone and their mother is saying, oh, it's time to buy low on Jonathan Taylor, which is true. But also you have to realize, like, there is also a difference between buying low and a buying window. Like, there's a chance that, like, the person with Jonathan Taylor would scoff at any offer 2 days ago. Now the world is crumbling around Jonathan Taylor. It's like, oh, I'll listen to, like, J.K. Dobbins in 2 seconds, or I'll listen to Aaron Jones in a first, or, you know, something along those lines.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's kind of an under-the-radar time to be selling Jonathan Taylor. And obviously people are going to be, oh, well, with Carson Wentz, the value's down. And honestly, Jonathan, it's possible Jonathan Taylor was too overvalued to begin with. I don't think people took the Marlon Mack factor into account. But like you said, he was getting a lot of snaps. Obviously, Taylor was a rookie, but he has the draft capital. That should have been an easy, hey, plug and play. He's ready to go. And it was still Marlon Mack pretty early and often. I see that as kind of a 1A, 1B split. And I think they get the other guys involved in the passing game as well. So I would assume Reich likes to keep his offenses fresh, keep it kind of rotating through. I guess we don't have a ton of precedent because of the injuries in the short term and the limited, you know, assets that they've had. But I feel like it's not going to be a real bell cow situation. So Jonathan Taylor could be a really nice way to get into a big time wide receiver. Or like Nathan said, if you are looking to kind of refill back in at the running back position, getting one of the other sophomore running backs or maybe getting a little bit older and adding a rookie pick onto it is a really clean move. It's a really easy way to get out. Even as promising as Jonathan Taylor is, I don't think he was overwhelmingly good last year. There was a lot of mediocrity. And as much as I hate Lions running backs, I'd probably rather have DeAndre Swift at this stage, which is tough to say, but I think I would.
I mean, that can be true to an extent, but we're downgrading Jonathan Taylor because of the Colts offense is crumbling around him. The Lions offense didn't need to crumble. Like, it also crumbled by Stafford leaving and them acquiring Goff. So, like, they're both equally in bad offenses at this current stage.
Right. Yeah. It's not going to be.
Goff is bad, but Goff isn't J.K. Beeson bad.
And I think Swift has more natural ability than Taylor. I think Taylor's a better pure runner, but I think Swift brings more to the entirety of the game. It's just Detroit, and I always hesitate when anything is combined with Detroit.
And just to go over Jacob Eason, in case you're like, oh, like, you know, some Debbie guys liked him, and I fall into this trap every single year. A guy who was a Debbie prospect, I end up liking him in the late rounds of rookie drafts. I do it every year, and I actually didn't end up with too much Jacob Eason, so I'm surprised by that. But Jacob Eason, one-time Debbie darling at Georgia, and his box score scout via RotoViz is not pretty. His 100% match sim score is Nate Sudfeld, 99 Mike Glennon, 91 Willie Tuitama, whoever that is, and 87 Sean Canfield. So a whole lot of nothing as far as his comparables on the Rotoviz box score scout. So not exactly thrilled with Jacob Eason, but like I said, from a team building perspective, the absolute best decision is not to go after a Nick Foles, to not go after a fill-in quarterback. Just be bad. And on the rare chance that he's not bad, then he's good.
Yeah, no, I mean, it'd be an outlier, but we've seen crazier things. So if people are really leaning on the fact that Eason could potentially be the future, I think that's a really easy way to get out of that share and get free value. I can't imagine really anybody's thinking that way. So
I mean, I think you can get a late second for him right now.
I think you can get more than that, to be completely honest. Yeah. I think, especially if you're targeting the Wentz owner, and if Wentz was their QB two in a super flex league, or potentially their QB one, if they went with kind of the late QB model in a draft, or if that's just kind of how they've built their team, they're going to be chasing those points, because chances are if they're kind of, you know, not great at quarterback, but the rest of their team is stacked, they're going to want those points. And that's, I mean, you know, honestly, cheap points for a contender.
All right, let's go on to our next topic, which is Kirk Cousins and COVID. Dynasty Tradecast had this question or discussed this topic probably about a month or so ago, basically talking about how we're valuing players that are either publicly unvaccinated or failing to disclose, which also relatively means that they're not vaccinated. How does that impact their fantasy value? How does that impact their dynasty value? And we even mentioned Kirk Cousins as someone who's like, I am choosing not to reveal my decision. And now the entire Vikings quarterback room is on the COVID list. Presumably at this stage, you know, obviously this comes out in a couple of days. So it might come out that, you know, Kirk Cousins tested negative and it was just one of the other quarterbacks. But right now we're kind of presuming right now that all of the Vikings, what's his name? Kellen Mond, Kirk Cousins, and Nate Stanley all have COVID, basically. So let's kind of just revisit the topic and from a different perspective, though. So Cam Newton kind of cited some of his poor play in the remainder of 2021 or 2020 to recovering from COVID, to, like, you know, it being a debilitating, you know, illness and virus. So are we going to factor this into our 2021 expectations? Like, oh, Kirk Cousins might be recovering from COVID, or player X is recovering from COVID. We should, you know, not be, you know, try and trade him for a similar level player who's going to give me better production because he's not recovering from COVID. Like, what are your overall thoughts? Like, obviously, no one's playing with COVID, but the real question is what's happening after they are removed from the COVID list?
Well, from what I remember, Cam was pretty sick. Obviously didn't handle it or have it the way that most people did, which was asymptomatic. You know, at worst, you lose your sense of taste, or you have a cough for a couple minutes or whatever it happens to be. But otherwise you wouldn't know that you had anything else going on. From my understanding, Kirk is asymptomatic, but somebody in the room, I think it was Kellen Mond was the one that tested positive, or was it Nate Stanley?
I think it was Stanley, but.
Either way. So one of those guys tested positive. That shuts the whole room down. Obviously, he's still on the list, so there's probably a pretty decent chance he tested positive as well. But
what it also means, this is also one of the negative effects of not being vaccinated, is that by the NFL rules, all you have to do is test negative once you're, like, if you have that direct contact, just test negative once. As long as you're vaccinated, you're fine. But there's a longer process that delays you from getting back with your team if you're unvaccinated.
Right, and that's my guess. It's just NFL protocol at this point. It doesn't change really anything for me. Obviously, if the room gets it, that's tough, but hopefully that means that they're not going to have it again. But that also hasn't, I guess, been true in every case either. So, keeping him out of camp, I don't think it's huge for Kirk Cousins. I don't think it's really all that important for that offense. They're going to be what they're going to be. I think it would be more important if Kirk was a rookie or a second year quarterback, or if they had a lot of rookies on offense, aside from maybe some offensive linemen. You know, it's not great for the pass catchers not to be catching balls from their starting quarterback, but at the same time, they have enough elite talent in their wide receiver room and at running back that I don't think this really affects much. As far as Cousins goes, missing some time, you know, it just, I guess it kind of is what it is.
Well, sure. He is like a 10-year veteran, so it's not like he needs every bit of training camp like a rookie would.
Right, and that's kind of where I'm going with that. Now, if it turns up that he was very sick and, you know, he had some different issues with it, he spent some time in the hospital, whatever it happens to be, if he had any complications whatsoever, I think that changes, because I did see pretty consistently the guys that actually got, like, sick and had some complications didn't play well for a while after they had it. Cam looked like he had never played football before after he came back off the COVID list. So I think if we get news that Kirk is actually sick, then we can change. But at this point, I think he's just in NFL protocol, and I don't think it really affects much aside from maybe missing some practices.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, let's move on to some Debbie talk here. There is some NIL. What is that? I forgot what NIL stands for. Anyways, it's the way that that college players are now paid. They're basically able to pay. Nike's able to pay them. Local car dealerships are able to pay them, you know, to use their, like, image and likeness, national image and likeness, or whatever it's called. So the NIL, I wasn't really expecting this to have much impact on the Debbie sphere. It's like, okay, well, instead of, you know, I'm having a Debbie player who's not making money, I have a Debbie player who is, you know, up, at least forward and up front. And I didn't think it would change much, but we have news that pretty much shows that it could change leagues depending on how commissioners want to approach it. Quinn Ewers, who is, I believe, the top-ranked quarterback and maybe even the top-ranked player of the high school class of 2021, he has forgone his senior season and his senior year of high school. He's going to graduate the summer of 2021 and be attending Ohio State in the beginning of the fall 2021, and he will be eligible to play in fall 2021. So we can talk about a variety of things here, but my first question, I am a Debbie commissioner, and I do not allow for high schoolers to be selected or auctioned, because I think that it requires a level of depth and understanding that not everyone has. And I think it's a bit unnecessary because, like, you still have so many years before he reaches the NFL. Well, Quinn Ewers is now 3 years away from the NFL, whereas I expected him to be at least 4 years away from the NFL, you know, just a few months ago. So what are your thoughts on, do you think that with a move like this, does this kind of force the hands of commissioners to allow for high school players in Devy? Or do you think it's like, you guys can just deal with it, you'll take Quinn Ewers? And, you know, it's, Quinn Ewers is not going to be the everyday example. He's going to be like, there's probably going to be like 2 to 3 guys per year as this evolves that this happens with.
Yeah, I think he's more in the outlier class, but I guess it depends on the depth of the Debbie within any given league. I know some leagues have rules where you can only get juniors and seniors, or you can only get sophomores and juniors, things like that. And all the seniors go to the rookie draft, yada, yada, yada. There's so many different rules, so many different ways to do it. But I feel like if it's just an open book and you can nominate anyone you want, I think at this stage we consider him a college athlete because he will be eligible in the fall. That's when all of the other impression will be eligible as well.
I'm more so saying, like, 2 months ago, we weren't expecting him to be a college athlete in September.
Sure. And if your Debbie draft has passed, obviously it's not going to, he won't be eligible until the next one. It's not like you can just go pick him up. No one has Debbie guys in their free agent pool. And if they did, that would be absolute chaos. I don't think this really changes a lot aside from maybe strategically. Obviously you're going to be chasing the money as well as fantasy owners, because you want the guys that are getting paid as well, because that means someone's seeing them on a bigger stage rather than just in college football. They're not just spending money for 2 years or 3 years or whatever it is. They think there's more there. They want to build that relationship. They want to have the extra money, the extra income for all of the free marketing. Well, not free, but inexpensive, I guess we can say, marketing that was free marketing over however long. So maybe Quinn becomes Tom Brady. Maybe Quinn becomes Drew Brees. Maybe that's in his future. And now all of a sudden, all these companies that have linked to him and his, while he's with Ohio State, now that extends into his pro career. Now they're making more money off of it that way. You know, I think if anything, this should be a chance for Debbie owners to kind of an extra little help. Obviously, before we were chasing 4-5-star athletes from 24/7 or whatever other, you know, different coaching sites or scouting sites, whatever they all were. And now we have potential contracts. You can look at contracts just like we would with anybody else. Hey, this guy's got this contract. Well, now we can do that with college players. So I think there's going to be more strategy for players rather than an issue for commissioners, unless it truly becomes, now we've got entire classes, you know, graduating early and going as 17-year-olds to college campus, and we're drafting them as 17-year-olds rather than 18 or 19-year-olds.
So basically what you're saying is that at this stage, change nothing other than, like, if you have a Debbie draft on August 4th, you can draft Quinn Ewers because he has basically declared he is a freshman starting in 2021. But if your Debbie draft was in June, he wasn't a college athlete at that point. So, or he wasn't projected to be a college athlete at that point. So it is what it is. So that does make sense. And that is kind of a fair way to do it. Like, okay, once the player announces their intentions or whatever, maybe like says, hey, I'm graduating high school early, so I'm gonna be able to do this. Like I said, it's not going to be a huge common prospect, so I don't think you really need to change league rules. I certainly wouldn't want to make this league change rule and then have like half of the Debbies be high school seniors, because I feel like that, you know, is not for the best of the league.
Yeah, and like I said, I mean, if this becomes the normal, when all of a sudden we start seeing all of your future 5-star guys coming out early because they can get that paycheck, or they can get to campus early, or whatever it happens to be. I think at that point, maybe you modify a little bit any early, you know, commits or any early whatever. I think that you would limit it to, at that point, only freshmen, sophomore, juniors, whatever, that were committed on whatever day it happened to be. You know, if they're not committed on National Signing Day, that's probably your line. Honestly, I think you would have to draw a line in the sand somewhere if it becomes the new normal. And this could become the new wave. We could see every player that's a 4- and 5-star signing deals with every company under the moon, local stuff, national stuff, whatever it happens to be. And good for the kids, go chase the money, absolutely. But I think that would probably water down what these companies are really looking for. So I don't think it's going to get overly crazy, and we're seeing tons and tons of people leave early and do all of that. So I think right now we'll call this an outlier, and probably expect it to be pretty limited year to year. Like you mentioned earlier, 2 or 3 a year, I would guess, would be maybe, you know, maybe we'll get in that 5 to 8 range. in a few years once this becomes more normalized. But as of right now, I think it's just kind of all so different for everybody. They're not really sure what to do.
But also, Nike is going to learn really quickly that the bust rate on five-star quarterbacks is so extremely high. Like, they're going to be given these million, $2 million contracts. Like, well, shit, this guy got benched in week two and never saw the field ever again.
And this, honestly, in my opinion, will make it higher. You're adding more pressure onto somebody earlier in their career when they're not ready to handle it as 16, 17, 18-year-olds by all of a sudden piling millions of dollars potentially onto them and putting them in the spotlight. So I think this is potentially worse for these players.
Now we're going to talk about some running backs and wide receivers and their path to rookie production and basically what needs to happen for their, you know, best case scenario or to improve their values, things of that nature. So first we have Javonte Williams. Now, the dream for some Javonte Williams fantasy owners is, for the most part, dead. The Denver Broncos are not going to land Aaron Rodgers, skyrocketing the value of one Javonte Williams. But what are some things that you can see happening or you think could happen that will make him live up to his value, exceed his value? What are some things that need to happen?
Well, I think the obvious one is that Melvin Gordon isn't 100% or Melvin Gordon, maybe Vic Fangio and the Denver Broncos see him as kind of a secondary piece at this stage. You know, whether it's Teddy Bridgewater or Drew Locke, I still think that offense is going to be relying a little more than maybe they have in the past on the running game. And I think that's probably why they brought Javonte Williams in. Now, they do have two great wide receivers in Jerry Jeudy and Cortland Sutton, as well as Noah Fant. And, you know, Philip Lindsay's not in town anymore. Royce Freeman isn't a thing. You know, it's really Melvin Gordon and Javonte Williams. So I think there's a pretty clean path here for Javonte Williams to some production. I don't think he's a 1A at all in 2021. I still think it's Melvin Gordon's backfield, but I think there's a real chance that it gets to that 60-40 or even a 50-50 split. And then if at any point Melvin Gordon isn't 100% or he does get fully injured, it could be the Javonte show earlier rather than later. My only concern is that he seems to me more like a 10 to 12, maybe 15 touch kind of guy rather than a bell cow guy. I'd like him more in a committee with whatever compliment that they can find. If that's Melvin Gordon, great. I just think he's probably going to be more suitable with a little more splashy player next to him. So we'll see. I guess it's, you know, we'll see what Denver wants to do. We'll see if he's involved in the passing game or if that's just going to be strictly the two wide receivers and Noah Fant. Beyond that, I don't think they really are going to throw the ball enough to keep everybody involved and interested. So, yeah, it's... I feel like they've got a couple of similar players in Gordon and Javonte Williams, but hopefully he can prove us wrong and maybe show out a little bit as a rookie.
Yeah, with Javonte Williams, his box score scout is not the prettiest. Mike Weber, Storm Johnson, Wendell Smallwood, Robert Hayward, Travis Homer. Not much good on the horizon. Mike Davis is one of them, so I guess that's decent. But he is going in the late fourth round, RB18, via Rotoviz Triplex ADP. And as far as like trying to find his positive outcome, trying to find where his value meets, the first thing is Drew Locke has to be much better of an NFL player than he was his first two seasons. Or Teddy Bridgewater needs to be, you know, at the very least, like a top 20-ish quarterback. So I think the main thing that needs to happen is the quarterback play needs to improve and be better. And then the second thing needs to be they need to give up on Melvin, whether it's through cutting or benching, whatever it may be. And I think that if the quarterback play does elevate, not that I'm expecting it, if the quarterback play does elevate, I think it's more likely they're like, okay, you know what? We have this young guy. We have the hot hand. We're going to give this guy as many touches as possible because this is what's going to make this young offense grow. Like I said, I'm not confident in either of the quarterbacks here, but if either of the quarterbacks do play well, I think it's a good thing for Javonte Williams.
Yeah, obviously, anytime you have good quarterback player or a positive offense, that's always better for running backs, assuming that they run the ball with any sort of volume and efficiency. So Yeah, like I said, it's interesting. I just feel like they got a souped up Royce Freeman, I guess. I mean, big, slow, not really your explosive guy, but we'll see. Maybe that's what they were trying to get out of Royce Freeman. Maybe they just wanted to run the ball up the middle and free some things up for the passing game. I feel like you can do that a little bit with Javonte, and maybe they add some more secondary running back options down the line. But at this stage, I worry more about Melvin, that they're not going to call him washed and let him go. And they're going to try to just feed him too much because of the money he's got left on his contract.
All right, let's move on to our next player. It is one Michael Carter of the New York Jets. Day three running back, has some decently high expectations. He's going RB27, or whatever his draft likes ADP, in the end of the eighth round, 8-9 turn. So what needs to happen for Michael Carter to exceed or live up to expectations? Similar to with Javonte Williams, I think quarterback play is huge here. If Zach Wilson plays well early on, I think that's going to be a positive indicator for Michael Carter. The Jets really don't have much at the running back position. Really, he's going to get some volume either way. It's just a matter of, is the Jets running back volume going to be good volume to be had?
Well, yeah, like you said, there's not much standing in his way. I think, honestly, the big thing here is Michael Carter any good? I don't know that we know that.
There's been plenty of bad running backs to be productive, though. Like Monte Ball was like RB13 his sophomore year.
But that offense was still somewhat okay, right? Yeah. This offense could be an absolute train wreck. If Zach Wilson isn't at least average, it's going to be ugly. And I think it's going to be ugly pretty early on. I feel like if anything, it's going to be a struggle bus for the offense and Michael Carter. I feel like he gets lost behind the line way too easily. And when you're doing that on a line that's already allowing more pressure than they should be and allowing running backs no space, that's not going to be great for him. But the volume should realistically be there. We just really, really need Zach Wilson to not be a potato, and we need the wide receivers to be able to get open. That's a lot to ask. I don't have huge expectations for production in this offense, but the volume says that there should be something there. So I guess it depends on if the juice is worth that squeeze. But for me right now, I'm probably avoiding the situation until we know more, which obviously right now is the best time probably to get in, because he's going to be at his cheapest. Probably same with Zach Wilson, to be honest, unless they both completely tank. But it's a weird one, because volume tells me that I should chase, but ability and situation are kind of lingering in my mind, like, not going to chase that.
And let's move on to another New York Jet, Elijah Moore, who has been getting some run with the ones, according to the good old Roto World NBC Sports Edge blurb. Elijah Moore's, getting some run with the ones, which a little bit unexpected with, I thought they might lean on some Denzel Mims. Denzel Mims, according to practice reports and things like that over the last, 18 months, he's terrible. He's not just not good. He's bad and shouldn't be an NFL player. So Elijah Moore getting some run with the ones basically means that he has the opportunity to be the wide receiver two behind Corey Davis. So do you see Elijah Moore in year one as he's dependent on what happens with Zach Wilson? Or do you think he's going to have enough volume regardless where he's going to be, a top 60 wide receiver?
Originally, I was pretty far off of Elijah Moore. I didn't get it. And the more I watched and kind of the more we learn now, the more I'm kind of getting like an Emmanuel Sanders type vibe. I feel like he can play that little slot and stretch the field for them from the inside. It's a weird one, because he should get a bunch of volume because, like you mentioned, and the reports say Denzel Mims is bad. I've been saying Denzel Mims is bad for 3 years. No one will listen. He's not good. He's not going to be good. He's just someone that came from a college that I refused to affiliate with after all of my misses. I fell in love with too many players from that college. and they will shall remain nameless. So
it has nothing to do with all the other bad things that happen at that school.
Yes, I mean, well, we don't need to go to that. I wasn't going to go there, Nathan. I'm glad you took it there, though. No, I do. I've really come around on Elijah Moore. I do think he can be. I think he can be definitely serviceable, and I honestly think there's a good chance that he sneaks into like a top 36 this season. Again, it kind of all relies on whether Zach Wilson is halfway decent or if he's awful. I don't think anyone's expecting Zach Wilson to be great. I don't think we're expecting a Josh Allen type rise. I think best case scenario is he turns into Baker Mayfield, which is kind of what he is. And a lot of people have really high hopes for Elijah Moore. A lot of people see Antonio Brown. I'm a little more realistic in seeing a lot of what I saw in Emmanuel Sanders and a lot of what I liked. And in this day and age, when we see these kind of smaller playmaker type wide receivers, he kind of fits that mold. So I got more excited over time. I do think Elijah Moore is still a pretty nice buy. And I think you can get him for relatively cheap. I would guess an early second would be a pretty easy, fair deal to get. And honestly, I think there's a lot of upside in that early second by getting Elijah Moore.
All right, let's wrap up the show with our final wide receiver, which is Rashad Bateman. Rashad Bateman got the quote-unquote bad landing spot by going to the Baltimore Ravens at the end of the first round. Now, I've been kind of bullish on the landing spot. I think Lamar Jackson is going to have a huge 2021. I think he's going to have look much more like – and Lamar Jackson is another guy who looked very bad after COVID. And so if we look at, you know, 9-10 months removed from COVID, he might be closer to that 2019 than we saw in 2020. So I'm bullish on Lamar Jackson, and that kind of means I'm bullish on Rashad Bateman, especially after John Harbaugh, is it John or Jim? John Harbaugh announced today that Marquise Brown, I don't know if you ever heard about this, Dan. Marquise Brown has a hamstring injury. Have you ever heard of that?
Soft tissue, you say? Never heard of it.
I am a huge Marquise Brown fan, but unfortunately, John Harbaugh said that it may be of the more serious variety for Marquise Brown's hamstring. And if so, if I'm going to stick with my huge year for Lamar Jackson opinion, that is going to result in a huge year for rookie Rashad Bateman.
And I think an equally huge year for Mark Andrews. And I do think we see J.K. Dobbins finally get a little bit of the work that he's been longing for. So, yeah, I think whether Hollywood Brown is healthy or not, I think we see a bigger leap from Rashad Bateman than a lot of people expected. Honestly, and I'm not joking, had he gone quite literally anywhere else, he would have been my wide receiver one. And I didn't love the Baltimore landing spot, but over time and with some news, not that I have any insiders, but I've gotten some other news that kind of you alluded to with Lamar Jackson, and the rebound for 2021 post COVID. Lamar was not Lamar. And it sounds like he is more what we were seeing in 2019. So I have much higher hopes than I had. It sounds like they're modifying game plans and trying to get back to the things that they did very well in 2019, getting back to airing it out some more, making and setting up that run much better by throwing the ball. And I feel like Baltimore gets it. If Hollywood's healthy, that offense is going to be scary. I think it's going to be very good regardless. So I think Bateman has a clean line to production with or without Hollywood Brown. Obviously, his volume will probably decrease a little bit if Brown is healthy for all 16 or 17 games. But I feel like we've got a pretty nice, maybe DK Metcalf-like type rookie season for Rashad Bateman. And then I think we say that potentially the sky's the limit for him beyond 2021. And I think we see him skyrocket up the charts.
Alrighty. So yeah, as far as like the answer to the question, like how does he get that production? It is some increase in pass volume, some injury to Hollywood Brown, and just some trust between Lamar Jackson and Rashad Bateman, which you and I are in agreement that it's very likely to happen at this point. And I mentioned during draft season that the hyperbole of like Rashad Bateman is this year Justin Jefferson, but it's kind of playing out like that's definitely a legitimate option slash, you know, outcome.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's big praise to try to put on somebody, and we haven't even seen him take a snap yet. But I would have had them in a very similar category as college prospects. So I definitely don't hate seeing that. Obviously, we all think Ja'Marr Chase is going to be an absolute world beater. So I think Rashad Bateman is on par with him. And obviously, Justin Jefferson, we saw what he did as a rookie. So I think the production will be there. And I think, again, kind of like Elijah Moore, now is probably the best time to get in if you are trying to buy Rashad Bateman, because I don't think he's getting any cheaper than he is right now.
All righty, that should wrap us up for this evening. Any last words, Dan?
That should do it.
All right, make sure to subscribe to RotoViz, RV Radio 2021. And yep, we're in August, so we're creeping towards the season, and go make some trades. Kadosh!
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.